Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel. Provocative conversation about world issues. Now, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Hello and welcome to our program, The Advocates, on WVOX 1460 AM. My name is Richard J. Garfunkel. I am the host of this weekly forum. This program is coming from the studios of WVOX in New Rochelle, the Queen City, located on the Long Island Sound. It can also be heard streaming live worldwide on WVOX.com. One can call into WVOX at 914-636-0110. But as I say each week, please stay germane to our subject. My guest is author, raconteur, world traveler Ben Frank. And our subject is his new book, Clara's Journey, and the issue and story of the Jewish diaspora around the world and how he's found it in far-off places. Welcome, Ben Frank, back to the Advocates, and thank you for joining me today.
Fine, Richard, thanks. I'm really happy to be here, and this is my first interview on Clara's Journey, and it's an honor to do it with you.
Thank you very much, as usual.
No problem.
You know, meanwhile, as I say each week, the mission of the Advocates is to bring to the public differing views on current public policy issues. Therefore, the internal movement of people around the world and immigration are always critical topics, why people go one place to the other. It's been the story of the world. Ben G. Frank is an author, a journalist. He's considered one of the country's most distinguished travel writers and commentators on Jewish communities around the world. With the publication of The Scattered Tribe, Traveling the Diaspora from Cuba to India and Tahiti and Beyond, he breaks new ground in reporting on far-flung exotic Jewish outposts. He's also the author of Travel Guides to Jewish Europe, a guide to Jewish Russia and the Ukraine, also the Caribbean, South America. His new book, Clara's Journey, is a story about human destiny. You know, Ben Frank's a former newspaper reporter with the New Haven Register, not too far from where we're located, the Elizabeth Daily Journal. He's published articles in Hadassah Magazine, National Jewish Monthly, B'nai B'rith Magazine, almost every type of Jewish periodical, as well as the New Haven Register, Inside Chappaqua Magazine, and Inside Magazine of Old Philadelphia, PA. He's got a Bachelor of Arts cum laude from the University of Pittsburgh, a very good school. We've had Don Goldstein on, who is one of the great experts on the military history in America from Pittsburgh, and he's got an MA from the Center of Israel and Jewish Studies at Columbia University. My wife has her master's from Columbia, and he lives with his wife, Reva, in Palm Beach County, Florida. It's a lovely area, I can tell you, and they have two sons and four grandchildren. You've had a wonderful winter down there, Ben. Isn't that correct?
It's been really great. I mean, sunshine every day, and I don't talk too much about it with Northerners, you know, up north, as they say.
That's been great up here. What are we? We're in in a deep freeze here in the middle of April. So
it'll get warmer, believe me.
You know, the Russian Civil War, which broke out in 1917 shortly after the revolution, brought death and suffering to millions of people, regardless of their political orientation. The war was fought mainly between the Red Army, we know as the Reds, consisting of the uprising majority led by the Bolshevik minority and the Whites, army officers, Cossacks, the bourgeoisie, and political groups ranging from the far right to the socialist revolutionaries who opposed drastic restructuring championed by the Bolsheviks. As a result of the overthrow of the Romanovs, the peace with Germany, the demobilization of millions of soldiers, the social order dissolved into years of chaos, change, hunger, and death. We're all familiar with Dr. Zhivago and many stories of that. You know, you've written a story about a young girl, Clara, and her intrepid journey. Her story could have been the saga of millions of young, dislocated people. Why did you write this story, and who was she modeled on? Any person or persons you knew of?
Well, yeah, actually, it's a basic story of my aunt, who the story is, from that point of view, true. She did leave alone to find my grandfather, actually, but she couldn't go west. You know, the war was still on in 1917 after the first Russian Revolution, and there were two. So she had to go east, and the amazing part of it was that she went alone on the Trans-Siberian Railway, 6,000 miles, Richard, across you know, Russia, and got to, and she went to Harbin and Vladivostok, names that we only imagine what it was like in those days. And she got to Japan, and here's a 17-year-old gal, you know, walking the streets of Yokohama. Unbelievable in those days, unaccompanied. And she got on a freighter, and she got across the Pacific. And then, you know, the story ends, really, with her finding my grandfather. But the story really is that whole journey across Russia alone and those, you know, tumultuous times.
You know, as you say that, I'm reminded of Borodin's classic In the Steppes of Central Asia. Just imagine crossing those long steppes, you know, those by rail. How many time zones? It's like 15 time zones.
It's not quite 15, but it's, I think it's somewhere between 8 and 12 time zones.
I know.
Sure. I should know that by heart, but basically there are a lot of them.
And you were on that train.
I was on that train. What happened was I had written parts of this story, you know, basically true, the aspects that I knew. I wrote it in The Scattered Tribe, you know, travel book. And when I heard the story, it's like I talked to her, but I didn't get all the facts. I got very, really little. And I decided, boy, if I'm going to write a novel about this story, I better go see this area. And I went across Russia. Now, I didn't go the whole Trans-Siberian. I mean, that's 6,000 miles in 6-7 days. But I went on a couple legs of it.
Yeah.
And just to get the feel of it, I mean, if you're writing a novel, you know, you have to know what you're writing about. You know, what's close to you, and you have to see, obviously, the area that it takes place in.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you bring that up. Almost the first modern novelist that saw the world and enraptured people was Ernest Hemingway, who went to places. Nobody had gone to places. They wrote about their hometowns, you know. They wrote about where they were. They wrote about their culture, whether it was F. Scott Fitzgerald or whether it was Nathaniel Hawthorne. They wrote about the world.
Right.
Hemingway went out into the world, and he saw those things, you know, and reported on them. You know, your book is a historical novel, and why is it important to know, in a sense, the events of 1917. Most people don't realize there were two Russian revolutions in that period. You mentioned them. Why were there two revolutions, and could you summarize what happened?
Yeah, I'll try to make it brief. But seriously, and that is important. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, Russia, people talk about Russia, but it only had until 1991, really, 8 months of so-called democracy. Because the Tsar was overthrown in the first Russian Revolution, February 1917, and that's when the people really arose. In fact, there were more casualties in those days than in the later one, the second one. But they overthrew the Tsar, and they established a provisional government, and it had semblances of democracy. There were going to be elections, etc., and it was 8 months, and, of course, it was all undermined by the Bolsheviks, you know, who later became the Communists or the Reds, and it was unbelievable. They just took over, you know, one night this so-called raid on the Winter Palace, and for 70 years you had, you know, a dictatorship, oppression, etc. And that's why there were two. One, according to their old calendar, February 1917, and then in October they called the Great October Socialist Revolution. In October.
And the personage of the first revolution was a man named Alexander Kerensky. And he lived lived his final days in your neighborhood, in Florida.
He actually, when they raided the Winter Palace, either that night or the next morning, he escaped. And the rest of the government was arrested, but he escaped and got out. And he went, you know, into exile.
Right. And it wasn't a bad place, Florida. A lot of people have been in exile there. You know, your second career has been built around and devoted to travel in the scattered Jewish diaspora. That's a word now, diaspora. It's an actual word in the English language about what it means, this spreading out from the Nebuchadnezzar, the fall of the first temple, the destruction of the second temple brought on this diaspora. Before we come to our first break, how did you move from travel writing, such as a travel guide to Jewish Russia and Ukraine and other published books, to this novel? What made you? Was it the story that you wanted to tell so badly?
Well, I think that's one of the best questions that I could be asked, because basically travel writing, people don't realize this, the narrative, like I wrote in The Scattered Tribe, travel narrative is almost like a novel. A travel narrative not only is fun, but it should be written like a novel in a way. It has memoir, personalities you meet along the way, adventures, the people that you meet and you describe. That's really good travel writing. And that's what I try to do in The Scattered Tribe. So it's not a long transition, you know, from travel writing in terms of description and places, the scenery, the background. People want to know that, you know. So it's not a big leap, so to speak, if you're, you know, into travel writing. You have to, of course, in a novel, which is much harder, I think, you know, have plot, fiction. You know, you want to make it a page-turner. And that's what I try to do in Clara's Journey.
Well, you know, the word history is his story. You know, it's a story. It's a journal.
Right. And this is a historical novel. Right. And there's some really great historical novels out there.
No, we know that. You know, we have to go to a short financial news flash. You're listening to The Advocates, WVOX 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com. I'm just talking to my guest, author, travel expert, Ben Frank. We're discussing his new book, Clara's Journey, its meaning, his experiences searching out scattered Jewish communities all over the world, and why people do that. We're going to get into that a bit, why people search out their own communities. I don't think it's only limited to Jews. I think a lot of people do it, but we'll talk about that when we come back.
With business news at 20 minutes past the hour, every hour. Here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on WVOX Worldwide.
From the Fox Business Network, service companies expanded in March at their slowest pace in 7 months. The Institute for Supply Management's Index of Non-Manufacturing Activity fell to 54.4 in March from 56 in February. The report measures growth in industries that employ 90% of the U.S. workforce. Mitsubishi is recalling more than 8,000 2013 Outlander crossover vehicles in the U.S. and in Puerto Rico. According to documents filed with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, there are three issues related to brake lights, fuel gauges, and shifting the vehicles out of park. The automaker will notify owners of the affected vehicles to repair the problems. And does your current job make you happy? Well, according to CareerBliss, real estate agents rank number one as being the happiest in their jobs, followed by quality assurance engineers and sales reps. On the flip side, teachers, nurses, and attorneys were among the unhappiest in their professions. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Lauren Simonetti.
Do you owe the IRS over $20,000 in back taxes, have unfiled returns, or are under audit? Are your receivables being levied? If you're an independent contractor or business owner, you must know your rights and options. The IRS has the power to take your receivables and shut you down. Tax Resolution Services can help. Tax Resolution Services will completely handle your case for you and deal with the IRS on your behalf and can negotiate a settlement of up to 85% off the original amount owed, including penalties and interest if you qualify. Call Tax Resolution Services now at 866-IRS-PROBLEMS or log on to taxresolution.com.
No matter where in the world you travel, you'll still be at home when you listen online.
Where am I?
WVOX.com.
WVOX.
Now, back to The Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates with my guest, author, former newspaper man, expert on travel, a lecturer. I had the pleasure of attending one of his lectures in sunny Florida not that long ago. Boy, I hated to go back here where we're almost freezing to death. I hate to say that. It's Ben Frank, and we're discussing his new book and his interest in the scattered Jewish communities from one corner of the world to the other. You know, people who travel and write travel books learn a lot about where they go. I mean, it's a matter of osmosis. You know, in your novel, you note the term, what Russia has been. How do you see Russia today, and what, in your opinion, will be Russia tomorrow, Ben? You're an observer of this country.
Well, that's a good question. Really interesting. You know, it's very hard to predict. But on the other hand, there are some things that are very positive there. I mean, it's not really a great democracy. You know, we got to put that word in quotes when you talk to Russia. Putin has been in power for a long time, just keeps changing chairs. They crack down on people who vocally really express dissent. And so it is difficult. On the other hand, you know, you can leave Russia today. It wasn't like that in 70 years. You can just get on a plane and fly out, or you can leave in a train, which is, in a way, excellent, because if you're unhappy, you can go, and you couldn't do that under a dictatorship, basically. So you can walk out of there, and I think in a lot of ways, the regimentation of the economy is gone. There are entrepreneurs now. It has gotten out of hand, you know. Mm-hmm. There are problems, and the government is really like leaning on people in terms of taking over things, taking over industry. So it's almost like it's the old days again. There's still a lot of freedom and a lot of difference. You can listen, go to the West. You can listen to radio, you know.
So there's a lot of chapters to be written, basically, moving forward. And it's going to go ebb and flow. You know, speaking of what you just brought up, in the wake of the fall of the communists, capitalism in a very aggressive way took hold. Billionaires were created, and the political fallout against many of them seems to be happening. We've heard these stories. Question for you, if economic inequities continue, could we see another Russian Revolution and return to communism? Or is the younger generation never going to return to that antiquated, no-growth totalitarian system?
Well, you and I think we know enough about history, what creates revolutions, you know. I mean, the last one in 1917, it was just unbearable. And so you had not only an economic crisis in 1917, but Russia lost more men than many of the countries combined in World War One. And it was just they couldn't handle it. And that, plus the lack of food and transportation, I mean, that fed this whole thing, this whole revolution, the first one anyway. That's the one we hoped would have happened, you know. But if you get really dire, and it's not extreme economic conditions now. If you get really dire economic conditions and you get them into a story of strife and war and everything, then you've got the basis of it. Plus, you don't have that strength in democracy that we've had since 1776 to handle things like that.
So, in other words, what you're saying, and we face in the West similarities. It's a different kind of revolutions we have. We hope to have our revolutions at the ballot box. But concentration of wealth in fewer and fewer hands is sort of what happens with unrestricted capitalism. That's a kind of thing that institutionally has to be guarded against, in a sense.
That we can sit here and debate and talk about for years and years. The only thing in Russia is, I doubt if Putin and his guys are, you know, going to allow unreined capitalism. I mean, it's going to be state capitalism. It's going to be anything. And that's what they've moved. They've nationalized the several oil companies, obviously. There's a lot of feeling that if people get too powerful and, you know, economically, and they want to voice their dissent or politically, they throw people in jail. I mean, it's happened already. They find all kinds of charges on them. I mean, basically, this country is hasn't had time to breathe, really.
Right, you know? Sort of like the Wild Wild West. You know, you've traveled all over the world, and in your previous book, The Scattered Tribe, you discuss small Jewish communities and places. Out of the way is Tahiti. You know, do you really, and this goes back to Russia, of course, such an important country in the world, large energy supplier, you know, important to the world and still is a military power. Did you really have to travel to Russia, including Siberia, Ukraine, to write Clara's journey? Is that essential to a novelist?
I believe it's in a novel, and after all, this is a novel that takes place in that time. In some places, not much has changed, you know, physically. But I believe in a novel, you have to get the feel of the country because, you know, you want to tell the reader what it was like for this girl, Clara, to travel all through this country. And, you know, a lot of this is it's a love story. It's her adventures. Now, it's a novel. It's fiction. But basically, she had to have a lot of adventures going across that country. So you have to get a feel of it. You know, towns like Irkutsk or where she went, or Harbin in Manchuria, now China, you know, and Vladivostok, which is historic in a lot of ways because, you know, American soldiers were there in 1917, right after, you know, before the end of the World War One, because they wanted to protect the supplies and and kept an eye on the Japanese. I mean, it's all involved there. The politics have been going on for years. So I try to weave in both the history and the novel aspects of it with really having seen that country.
Yeah, well, Americans seem to forget Russian animosity towards both the British and Americans for their interventions at the end of the war in the last year or so, especially in the ports of the Baltic ports and especially in the area of Siberia and extreme eastern Russia. So there's no doubt that these, for many peoples, these memories are hard to dismiss. We're coming up to a commercial break, but quickly, in 30 seconds, how bleak is it when you look out the window on some of those train rides? Just give us a word picture for 30
seconds. It's the Russian winter. I mean, you know, the winds come off the steps, and, you know, it's unbelievable. It's cold, and I tell people, you don't want to go to Siberia in the winter. You know, you want to go in the summer, and it's hot in the summer.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So it's very interesting in that sense. We have to go to a commercial break. You're listening to The Advocates, WVOX 1460 AM, live streaming on WVOX.com. One can always call to 914-636-010. I'm with my guest, author, travel expert Ben Frank. We're discussing his book, its meaning, his experiences searching out the scattered Jewish communities all over the world, and of course, his new novel, Clara's Journey. We'll be back in a moment or so.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. A tape gets out there, and now Rutgers University men's basketball coach Mike Rice is fired.
This videotape was broadcast on ESPN, showing him shoving and berating players, throwing balls at them, and using gay slurs. Rice had already been suspended for three games, fined $50,000, and ordered to attend anger management classes. The ESPN video prompted outraged comments on social media and criticism from New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and NBA star LeBron James.
Fox News Radio's Courtney Keeley. A courthouse attack in Afghanistan.
At least 53 people killed, including nine attackers. The fighting broke out after nine suicide bombers disguised as Afghan soldiers stormed a courthouse in Farah province, close to the border with Iran. They were trying to free more than a dozen members of the Taliban.
Fox News Radio's Emily Wither. Fox News. We report. You decide.
Under new and top-notch management, Leon's Taxi Service in Larchmont is now Depot Taxi and Limousine Service, managed by Charlie Scott and Maria Valerio, who are known for their extensive experience in the transportation industry. Larchmont's Depot Taxi and Limousine Service acquired new automobiles and access to new stretch limos, always ready to safely drive you to a wedding, a graduation, a business meeting, an airport, the theater, or just shopping around town. Larchmont's Depot Taxi and Limousine Services welcomes new accounts. If you call them at 914-834-4000, you'll find the number for Larchmont's Depot Taxi will be a number you'll always call when it comes to transportation. Ever reliable. Larchmont's Depot Taxi and Limousine Service is the ultimate in riding with style and with prices which are truly fair. Their drivers are neatly dressed, always anxious to please, and will safely deliver you to your destination. In Larchmont, the number to call, 834-4000.
Hello, my name is Igor Telnik. I'm the general manager of Premium Nissan in New Rochelle. I'm proud to tell you that Premium Nissan is Westchester's largest used car supercenter. And let me tell you why. I can sell a 2009 Nissan Altima online for only $12,800. Now, my competition, they also list that car online for the same price. They forget to tell you that that's after a $3,000 cash down payment. So you're actually paying $15,800 for the same car. Why would you pay more? Visit us online at premiumnissan.com or in person, and the price that you see is the price that you pay. Whether you're paying cash or financing, you'll receive the same low price. Come down and see us at 2533 Palmer Avenue in New Rochelle, or visit us online at premiumnissan.com, and the price you see will be the price you'll pay. Whether you're paying cash or financing, you pay the same low price at Premium Nissan, Westchester's fastest growing Nissan dealership. See us online now at premiumnissan.com.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Forecast, Westchester County in the vicinity for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll see mostly sunny, windy conditions. Highs will climb into the middle 40s with gusts of 35. Mostly clear, continued breezy and cold. Overnight lows falling back into the upper 20s. Mostly sunny on Thursday. Thursday's highs will climb into the lower 50s. Clear, not as cold at night. Lows upper 30s. Morning rain showers on Friday. With a partly cloudy skies later in the day. Highs will climb into the 50s. Mostly sunny, lower 50s on Saturday. Cloudy weather, low to middle 50s on Sunday. I'm Steve Pelletieri, Jr. reporting for WVOX Worldwide and VIP HD.
We have ways of making you talk.
Well, okay, hotshot.
WVOX Worldwide.
WVOX.
Now, back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to The Advocates with my guest author, former newspaperman, now Floridian resident and expert on travel, Ben Frank, and we're discussing his new book and his interest in the scattered Jewish communities from one corner of the world to the other. Ben, getting back to Clara's journey and the social history it relates, you based your novel on family history, stories that were passed to you, down to you verbally and in writing. You've stated that your novel symbolizes the saga of thousands who had to fight and endure hardship to reach America. Is Clara's journey a metaphor for the millions of Eastern and Southern Europeans that found their way to America from 1880 through World War I to this great country? Is it that?
Yeah, definitely, and I still think it resonates today. One of the things I thought about in thinking about immigration is, you remember when the Berlin Wall was up?
Sure, of course.
Well, basically, I never heard of anybody who tried to climb over the Berlin Wall to the east, you know? So, and more
that's
people.
True.
Yeah, and that that's one of the symbols, obviously, of America. You know, people since those days and even before, obviously, want to come here. This is, whatever we say and the problems that we go through, this is still the land of opportunity. And Clara knew it, and I think that's when, in many ways, though she got sidetracked by a love story and a love adventure, and that's in the novel. But I think that was one of the reasons, plus, of course, to find her father. But I think one of the reasons in there was, of course, get to America, you know, because they knew what life was like there. And they knew what it was going to be like. And she came at the end of the mass immigration from Russia, because she came in 1918. And it was to last a couple more years. And then the Soviets clamped down. And that was the end of it, you know. So, yes, it's always been there. And I think it always will be there. I think we are still, you know, the shining light, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I know sometimes people say, it's corny and all that, but after traveling the whole world, I believe that's true.
Well, remember, of course, immigrants are always pioneers, adventurers. They are they're the strong stock that's willing to give up the past, willing to throw family and roots aside and come here. And we've done some stories on that before. Even, you know, Franklin Roosevelt addressed the Daughters of the American Revolution, you know, this original group at their Constitution Hall, and one of his first lines was, "Welcome, fellow immigrants." And many of our immigrants were brigands and pirates, and they didn't like it, but it was true.
By the way, you know, part of the story is, of course, she goes to find her father, Clara, in, you know, Clara's journey. But he left her father, he left in 1914 because one of the things that drove him, I mean, there were all kinds of reasons, was one of the things that drove him, you couldn't travel anywhere. You had to have a permit. If you were a Jew and you lived in, unless you lived in maybe the big city, you couldn't go from one place to another.
Sure.
So, and I have it, he had to go to the police, always get a pass. What kind of country is this?
Yeah.
And he had heard in America, you can get on a train, a bus, a car, whatever. And there were cars in those. And you can go somewhere.
Sure.
So I think that that's when you try to restrict people and hold them back, and I think people will get that feeling in this whole book, Clara's Journey.
Well, as you said, America's been a historic nation of immigrants. From the days of the Pilgrims through the old and new immigrations, late 1840s and the 30 years before World War One. With all your travels and countless interviews with people all over the world, are people basically the same? Do they have the kind of same desires? Do they have similarities that you can see?
You know what? You know, I used to say, by the way, I lived, you know, Richard, I lived in Chappaqua most of my life. I lived in the New York area. And by the way, part of this novel was a lot of the research was done at the Chappaqua Library, which I think is excellent. And, you know, in writing groups, we met all throughout the county. So I really fond ties to Westchester. And I think that, you know, I've always said that, in a way, people in many ways are the same all over the world, you know, the same motivations in a way. Every town has this and that and the other thing, you know. People make it up and experiences and life experiences. But I think that people travel because they want to learn more. And actually, I've discovered that the more I travel, the less I know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you realize how much you don't know.
Right.
So I think people want to go there, and part of it is meeting people and talking to people. I think if you walk in the streets of Moscow, you'll learn more about, you know, this country, Russia, than, you know, reading it from a textbook. So you have to do both.
No question, Ben. You know, America has always depended on immigrants for both cheap labor and for a world of new ideas, from the black slaves brought here from Africa to the Irish and Chinese who built the railroads, to Germans and Scandinavians who worked the land, finally to Jews, Italians, Greeks who toiled in the needle trades, the factories and the building trades. We seem to have benefited from new blood. You know, in recent decades, especially during World War II, Mexican farm workers came to work in the agricultural fields to supply for the war effort. We have a new immigration problem today, as we all know. What should we do, Ben, as a person who's seen people all over the world? How do we mainstream these people?
Wow, that's the million-dollar question, right? But I have certain feelings of it, you know, having traveled and seen this desire to come here. I remember, by the way, you know, and I think I read about this in my travel book, The Scattered Tribe, being in Hong Kong after, I guess it was in the 1980s, after the Vietnam conflict. And all those boat people, we called them boat people then, trying to get here and everything. So, you know, there are all kinds of experiences where they couldn't get here. They were kept out. The same with the Jews, you know, before World War II, couldn't get here. A lot of them went to Cuba because it was a way station to come to America. So I have the feeling that we have to do something to fix this immigration problem. I would never believe in sending people back. I mean, that's my own, maybe it's historic, obviously, and moral feeling, but I don't think we should ever send people back. But we have to straighten it out. We have to make it legal, you know. On the other hand, I don't believe just people walk in anytime they want. What about all those people who came here who, you know, waited in line and waited to get here and came in? So we can't go to either extreme. And I think we have to straighten out. I think we're starting now.
In other words, I think
we'll get something. I believe we really will get something.
So we need a process, basically a process.
Right. This is the way you come into the United States. This is the way you do. We have to take care of the people who are here now. I think, 15 million Man,
I don't think anybody insanely knows.
No,
I mean, especially
amount, but it's millions. It's
right,
gotta be millions.
Right. And especially to children who were brought here without any knowledge or,
yeah,
you know,
right.
they were or born here because, you know, right. usually if they're born here, they are they're able to be citizens. There are other restrictions in that. You know, you mentioned boat people. And it was very interesting that these Cambodian and basically Cambodian, some Vietnamese boat people came here, and a number of them were settled in the Houston area.
And California also.
And almost all of them were on welfare, obviously. You know that within 5 or 6 years, there was virtually not a case of anyone on welfare. They were able to initiate and integrate and assimilate in the American economy. And I remember the top student at West Point 1 year was either a Vietnamese or Cambodian boat person. So they had, that's really making it in America when you become the top student at West Point, where usually the elite of the elite go and achieve. I mean, anybody has been.
I think I have confidence. We're going to straighten this out. It's all part of actually the both of my books, because emigration plays a big part in a lot of people's lives and stories. And all the countries that I went to, in, let's say the scattered tribe, Vietnam, Burma, Cambodia, India also.
Right.
People come here because this is, like we said, this is the place to come if they want to.
The golden land, yes. We have to go to a commercial break. You're listening to The Advocates, WVOX 1460 AM, live streaming at WVOX.com. I'm with my guest, author, travel expert, Ben Frank. We're discussing his new book, Clara's Journey, its meaning, his experiences searching out scattered Jewish communities all over the world. What is the commonality of these people? That's the question today. Is there a commonality? We'll be back in a moment.
With world and national news 3 times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. Massive drug raids launched in the Northeast and Caribbean.
More than 700 federal, state, and local law enforcement officers were in on these raids, most of which took place around New London, Connecticut. Authorities count more than 100 arrests. Other operations in New York, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Puerto Rico, and the Dominican Republic, breaking up what one official calls a huge heroin and cocaine ring.
Fox Radio's Rich Johnson, the president in Colorado today, pushing for tighter gun laws.
At the Denver Police Academy, the president will praise Colorado for passing gun control laws, and he'll urge the U.S. Senate to follow suit. But the legislation in Congress appears in trouble, and White House Press Secretary Jay Carney appealed for them
to the memory of the victims of Newtown, that all of these measures get a vote.
But Second Amendment supporters like Colorado House Republican Cory Gardner say the legislation doesn't address the problem.
Fox Radio's Mike Makowitz. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Imagine a place alive with sights and sounds, where 5,300 gleaming slot machines play their own special music while a live concert is just about to begin. Surrounding you are all new roulette, baccarat, and craps games that put you in the middle of the action. So where are you? Vegas? Atlantic City? Nope, Empire City Casino. Join in on the excitement of all new table games, roulette, baccarat, and craps, and 5,300 slots. Empire City Casino, your home for table games. Exit 2 off the New York State Thruway.
Dry cleaning. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I have a real thing about this, and I've been telling you for years that when it comes to custom quality dry cleaning, you know, where you get your clothes back in perfect shape without that awful chemical cleaning smell, there's only really one dry cleaner that I know of in all of Westchester you can always count on. Scott Solomon Solo Clean. It's on the Post Road in Mamaroneck, New York. So if you want your valuable clothes returned in like new, pristine condition without that awful commercial cleaning smell, please try Solo Clean. The cost for their professional custom handling is really, incidentally, really the same you're probably paying right now. Solo Clean in Mamaroneck, New York on the Post Road. They're the best dry cleaner in Westchester. I'll go up against anybody on that claim.
The best local radio show covering golf. That's what the Daily News calls the Metro Golf Show. But find out for yourself each and every Saturday morning from 8 to 8:30 here on WVOX. Hi, I'm Tom Merriam. Join Bill Meth and me each week here on 1460 AM as we bring you everything you need to know about golf in the metropolitan area. From interviews with the top stars to tips from the top pros to profiles of the area's top courses, the Metro Golf Show covers the world of golf from tee to green. The Metro Golf Show is a hole-in-one for golf fans at every level. So before you tee off, turn on the highly acclaimed Metro Golf Show Saturday mornings from 8 to 8:30 here on WVOX 1460 AM.
When do you listen?
It's nice to sit back in the car and listen to it while you're driving.
Okay, driving where?
Everywhere.
No reason to reset your preset. Keep it right here. VOX.
WVOX.
Now, back to the Advocates with Richard Garfunkel on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com. Join in the conversation at 914-636-0110. Once again, here's Richard Garfunkel.
Welcome back to the Advocates on WVOX with my guest, author, former newspaperman, expert on travel, Ben Frank, and we're discussing his new book and his interest in the scattered Jewish communities from one corner of the world to the other. You know, Ben, as a travel writer, you've searched for Jewish communities all over the world. In our final segment, let's talk a bit about your book, The Scattered Tribe. A lot of people don't know this. How did Jews wind up in far-off places in every continent? I mean, they were basically Sephardic or people from the Middle East and European folk. How did they wind up in places like Tahiti? I mean,
well, Tahiti is more modern, although there were American adventurers who went to Tahiti, and some of them were Jewish. There was one, in fact, who married, and I write about this in The Scattered Tribe. There was one who married the boss's daughter, so to speak. Actually, he married the niece of the king's relative and became a powerful advisor to the king of Tahiti before it became French. Tahiti's, you know, a French protectorate, and what you have there now are there's a synagogue there in Tahiti. It's a beautiful place. The country's beautiful. The area around it, some people call it paradise, you know, Bora Bora, places like that. But many of them live there, about 250 Jews on the island, and most of them are from France. Many of them came from North Africa, went to France, and, you know, Richard, there's some people in the world who don't like the big cities, Amsterdam, New York, Paris. They want to live, quote-unquote, they want to get out of the quote-unquote rat race, and they want to live on a small island. Well, it's French, so they got all the rights and privileges thereof, and it is a nice life there.
Let me ask you a question. You know, as a traveler, and you meet people from all over the world, I mean, do people of other creeds, races, religions, proclivities search out their own? Is this unique to just Jews, or do people do this all over?
No, I don't think it's unique to Jews, though. Jews do it a lot. I mean, I discovered over the years, especially that's why I wrote The Scattered Tribe. I mean, I've discovered over the years, many, many American Jews, when they travel, they have to go find the synagogue, the kosher deli, you know, the Jewish community center. It's a way of attachment, of peoplehood, one people, of, you know, finding your co-religionists. It makes traveling, by the way, even more interesting, because then you really meet people who you can talk to, and another group of people. And part of what you asked before is, I mean, Jews have been traveling all throughout our history, many times, unfortunately, because they were expelled, etc., and all the problems that Jews had in the world. So they end up in places where people wouldn't expect them.
Far-out places, I can tell
you. Yeah, well, for example, India. India, for example, the King Solomon's Navy traded with them. So there have been Jews in India for 2,000 years. And that's one of the reasons I thought that a lot of readers, it's a good travel book, would like to read about exotic Jewish communities, not just Jews, but non-Jews, and learn what's going on in these countries. And I picked some exotic ones. You just mentioned Tahiti, for example.
And, of course, and a lot of society was restricted to the well-off, and a lot of societies were wide open. You could always get into Burma, and that was closed to a degree, and Indochina was strife with violence for years. So there are new opportunities for people. Certainly Indochina has become, after decades of war, I mean, literally, it was almost a 100-year war against the French, and of course the last chapter, Vietnam, and
right.
and has become a place to stop for many. You know,
by the way, Vietnam. If you go to Vietnam today, nobody will talk to you about the war.
It's
you know, and Burma, for example, is now opening up, and I was there before it opened up. Only in the last couple of years, you couldn't even mention the name Suu Kyi. You know, the icon,
right.
the woman icon for democracy. Now she's all over the portraits, all over. Things are opening up. She's in the parliament. I mean, it's not great yet, but it's a step forward. And
sure.
that's why I think, and if I must say, I think both these books, you know, one complements the other one.
Mm.
And so I think that's one of the things that you learn from travel is how much you don't know. So I try to pass on what I've learned.
You know, of course, times have changed, thankfully, and mostly for the better since the dark days of World War II. Where the whole world was on the edge of cataclysm. We all know that, at least our generation. I don't know whether the newer generation knows or cares even. But are Jews facing less prejudice as World War II recedes in the memory of most peoples around the world? And when you go to these far-off places, isn't the old bugaboos about prejudice, it seems? Has there been a change that you see when you meet different peoples?
I think one of the biggest changes in the world since World War II, obviously, is Jews have a state of Israel. And they have now an address to go to. If something happens, they can go there if they want. And we live, you mentioned the diaspora in the beginning of the show. We live in, American Jews live in America because we want to and we love it and we live here. And we do it by choice. So that, the diaspora has changed. But the big thing is that the Jews have a state of Israel. If they need or want to or whatever, they can always go there. That they have no immigration restrictions or anything. They will find a home there.
Mm.
But that's big change since World War II. As far as anti-Semitism gone, I'm not sure it's gone down. I think it's out there. I think it exists most countries in the world. And in some places it may be better, but it's not that great now.
Well, but it's interesting. You know, in the pre and post World War II era, basically the center of the 20th century, when race hatred and the struggle between communism and fascism arose to the cataclysm of what we saw in World War II, most people were defined by empires or collectives. You had the Christian world. You had the Muslim world. You had the third world, peoples that were either colonial peoples or subjugated peoples. And Jews were basically that one group that was caught in the middle between all these groups. Today, in the rise of individualism, the rise of groups, tribes, giving definition to them, are Jews sort of becoming lost amongst all this new reality of new people when there's a great deal more pluralism?
I wish that was so, but if that be so, then is all this anti-Semitism that you find in certain countries in the West strong, very strong now, that wouldn't be there. I mean, I really agree with you. I mean, one would think that, right? But it still exists and it still goes on. And look, even Russia, by the way, had seven under communism, had 70 years of I want to phrase this correctly, you know, throwing Jews into the concentration camp, but Russia under communism was certainly anti-Semitic despite all their proclamations.
Mm.
So, and they used a lot of subterfuges, etc. So, I wish it was so, Richard. I mean, who knows? Maybe it'll be better in the next generation.
Right. You know, we only have a minute or so left. As a world traveler who's written many books and articles of travel, give us very quickly, what are the secrets you can reveal? What should people avoid, and are there places that all of us should avoid?
I don't tell people where to travel, and that's a great question. I don't tell people where to travel. It's up to them. For every country that I've been to or mentioned, people say, I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't give them the satisfaction, etc. I've heard those kind of things. So I go there, and people have to decide where they want to go. The other thing is the big secret is plan ahead. That's why I wrote The Scattered Tribe on, Globe Pequot Press, the publisher on that one. And the novel, they can get a sense of Russia, Marion Street Press, the publisher on that one. So I never tell people where to go. One secret, though, the second one is plan ahead.
Right.
Don't sit in the hotel room and decide that day where you're going to go.
Right.
And it's easier now to plan ahead. We have books, travel books, et cetera, and I hope they read mine.
Right. No question about it, and it's true. But do places become, unfortunately, for Bowden, the front page of the New York Times today talks about Egypt, how they are suffering terribly over their activities, their social activities, their social revolutions, and they're hurting.
That's true. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to conclude and say that I think people should read that and understand. Of course, I'm pretty sure people do go there, but bad press is bad press.
Yeah, Ben. I don't say you should go into a war zone.
Right.
Or I don't say you should go into a country that's having troubles, let's say Syria, you know.
Right.
But other places, you know, it's up to the individual.
Right. Ben, before we close, I want to thank you for being a guest again, for joining me on The Advocates. You're always a great guest.
I enjoyed it, and it was great questions.
Thank you. You know, if you want to hear this broadcast or any of the other archived Advocate broadcasts, you can access on my website, advocates-wvox.com, where information my guests will always posted. You can read all about Ben Frank. Next week, The Advocates will host Richard Brightman, Alan J. Lichtman, authors of FDR and the Jews, the real story of FDR's effort on behalf of European Jewry. That's a big immigration story, one of the interesting stories that has been debated back and forth now 68 years since the end of the Second World War and a decade or half before the Second World War. So this is right up Ben Frank's alley, right up anybody who's interested in the free flow of people. We'll see you next week, and we'll talk about this very interesting story. Thanks a lot, Ben, again. Have a great day.
To The Advocates on 1460 WV.